Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
So might Oregon's first-in-the-country automatic voter motor registration come to other states? Barry Burden is a political science professor and director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So, Professor Barry, let's get to questions people might have. We just heard non-citizens will not be allowed to do this. In Oregon, people will be required to bring proof of citizenship, birth certificate, passport, when they get their licenses. So other states might have to change their procedures to do that.
Yeah, there were some worries that this new system in Oregon would be less secure than the old system, but in fact, it's the opposite. By collecting data that the DMV already has, you've got a citizenship check built in, whereas the traditional voter registration system is typically a person filling out a form and marking a box indicating that they're a citizen without a lot of follow-up in terms of documentation. So one of the arguments for this new Oregon initiative is actually that it provides more protections for checking citizenship rather than less.
Right. Most people know that in most states you bring maybe your water bill or something for proof of residency, but as you say, only check off proof of citizenship. What about concerns about privacies? Oregon's Republican Senator Kim Hatcher said in a statement that the bill could endanger our most vulnerable citizens if their personal information is suddenly made public, as voter rolls are. They're public. Your thoughts on that?
Well, in most states, the DMV and the voter registration authorities are already interacting and sharing data. The motor voter law passed 20 years ago back in 1993 already permits that, and so data is being shared in that way. If a person had a particular concern about their privacy, say they were a victim of domestic abuse or stalking, there are laws in most states that would allow them to make their data private and not accessible to the public generally.
Right. Police officers and others who might feel vulnerable or don't want, for instance, addresses leaked out, that information just isn't given.
Yes, that's right. Most people can screen their information to make it private. Or they can opt out of the system entirely. If they really don't want to be registered to vote for some reason, don't want to be on the voter rolls, they're permitted in Oregon or really any other place to say, please leave me out.
Yeah. Well, what is it about Oregon, though, that might make it easier for this to work there and more difficult for other states?
Well, Oregon has a few things going for it. One is it has very high registration rates to begin with. Something like 85% of the public is already registered. This initiative, if everyone said yes, who's being brought into the system, would add about 300,000 more people, so it would get them from 85% registration to maybe 95% registration. So only an increase of about 10 percentage points. In a state that had much lower levels of voter registration, there'd be many more people to bring in. It would be much more difficult. The other thing Oregon has going for it is its election system, which is largely voting by mail. Ballots are sent to everyone automatically if they're registered by mail, and the ballots can be returned either by mail or left at a drop box. Voters there seem to love that system. It's quite efficient. It's popular. And they have very high levels of voter turnout. So there's sort of a culture there of public engagement and high levels of participation, which I think makes this more palatable in a state like Oregon than maybe someplace with a different tradition.
Do you see any downside to the voter motor registration?
It's hard to see a downside when there's more efficiency, more security, more opportunity for people to be in the system. There's still protections for privacy and for people to opt out if they wish to be. I suppose there'll be some initial costs that are involved in linking up the DMV and Secretary of State systems in a way. And there may be some growing pains, as there is with any new policy initiative. But I think in the long run, it probably has financial benefits and democratic benefits, small-d democratic participation benefits.
Well, but as we heard, the debate over it seems to fall along partisan lines, Democrats in favor, Republicans against. This is what we just heard in Oregon. Does that kind of divide apply to other, some would call them advances, some wouldn't, other changes in voting in this country?
Unfortunately, yes. Really, since that meltdown back in 2000 in Florida in the presidential election that year, election reforms have taken on a partisan coloring. Rightly or wrongly, Democrats believe that increasing access is going to help them as a party, and Republicans generally more concerned about security and the integrity of the system. But there is one exception. There's actually one reform sweeping across the country that has bipartisan support. And that's online voter registration. That's been adopted in red states, blue states. And in fact, it's really the same system in terms of data that's being taken on in Oregon now. It's an opt-in system rather than an opt-out system, but it is essentially sharing data between DMV agencies and voter registration agencies.
You mentioned Republican, in particular, concerns about fraud. Where are we on the numbers of cases of fraud? The claims of fraud are behind most of the restrictions on voting in 22 states. 13 have passed voter ID laws. As people research just how much fraud there is, how much is there?
Well, it's a complicated answer. It partly depends on how we define fraud. So let's here call it something like a voter acting in a way that violates election law, maybe impersonating another voter, voting twice. So we're focused on the voter side of things. It really looks like that's a rare activity, extremely uncommon, not a coordinated activity with groups of people acting in concert, really inconsequential in most elections because it's a handful we're talking about in most states. Voter ID laws are one way to deal with that, though they really only prevent voter impersonation at the polls, and that's probably the least common kind of voter fraud. Where fraud is probably more likely is in absentee ballots. Those ballots are sent by mail. They're out of the control of the state at that point, and we're not always certain who's completed them and who's returned them, who's doing the delivering of those ballots. But the states have been pretty quiet about regulating absentee ballots, where I think most experts agree there's more chance for fraud, and have focused instead on things like voter identification, where we suspect the benefits are pretty minimal.
I want to, while we have you, ask you to weigh in on another change that seems to be on the horizon. San Francisco is looking to become the first big city to lower the voting age to 16. Some smaller areas in Maryland, for instance, have already done this. Tacoma Park, Maryland, and Hyattsville, Maryland, already did this. And it's just for voting on municipal issues, not state or federal issues. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's an interesting proposal, and it has been floated in a number of places and I think is getting a little traction. As you say, it's only for voting in local elections, and I think it's really school board and city elections that are the interest here, wanting to let students who are 17, 18, juniors and seniors in high school, obviously affected by educational policy in their districts. They are drivers, so they're on the roads, and we care about those policies, and so it's a way to bring them into the system. It's controversial. I mean, these folks are not yet adults. They haven't reached majority age, and so to give them voting rights is a little controversial. But it's an interesting idea, and I think we're just going to have to see how it works in practice.
Do you think one of the – or do you hope maybe that one of the side effects would be that young people would begin earlier to be interested in voting and then maybe become voters later on?
Yes, we have this problem that those who are first eligible to vote at age 18 are the least likely to do so. And the likelihood of a person voting generally increases as they age. And so a question a lot of people have been grappling with is how do we get young people active in the system early on, establish that habit when they're young? So I think both the Oregon proposal, which would bring them into the system automatically, and lowering the voting age or doing some kind of pre-registration system for people who are not yet 18 – are ways at trying to remedy that disparity between the young and the old. Again, we're going to have to see whether that really works in practice, but I applaud at least the experimentation that's going on in the states and cities.
That's Barry Burden, a professor of political science and director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Burden, thank you.
Glad to be with you. Thanks so much.